CCR Podcast, episode 150. I'm your host, Justin Skirbo, and today I'm joined by Shane Weaver.
Hello.
And I'm joined by Mike Potts.
Trust the old blood, or fear. Fear the old blood.
Yes, very good. Very good. Guys, 150 episodes. Holy shit. Over 3 years, almost 3 years. 52 weeks in a year?
52.
Yeah. It's definitely not straight, but we have certainly accomplished something great here, I would say.
It's been like 150 episodes over the course of like 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, I feel like. It's been a while. Do you remember the old days where we had 6 people on one podcast at my mom's kitchen table?
Yeah, that was the first one.
Yeah, on a single snowball mic.
Oh my god. And we didn't really understand that a snowball doesn't actually record in all directions at once.
We were just babies then. Oh my god. We were nobodies. And now we're somebody.
That was the most echoey room.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. It's actually funny. Every now and again, just to kind of like refresh myself, I'll go back and just play like the oldest one. Some of our episodes were actually like lost in time. We had like, I think the earliest one that's live on SoundCloud, like in the subfeed, is like 17 or something like that.
Oh, thank god.
Because we were like moving through services and stuff. But dude, even if you go back to that one, it's bad. Like, it's bad.
17, yep. It has no title.
Yeah.
It's just episode 17.
We've learned so much.
April 20th, 2016.
16, so yeah, up. 3 years ago. And wow. It's definitely been earlier than that. But gentlemen, we've got some stuff to discuss tonight. We got some new games that have just dropped that we have some hot takes on. We've got some games that have been out for a little while that we've got some more marinated opinions on, I guess you could say. But first, we've got just a few news topics, one in particular that I'd like to hear your guys' opinions on. But we've learned that PlayStation has filed for a patent that it's essentially ensures backwards compatibility on the PlayStation 5 to go back to PlayStation 4, but also PlayStation 3, and also PlayStation 2, and also the original PlayStation. So this is kind of crazy to me. I was almost certain that PlayStation 4 games were going to be backwards compatible because, like, I feel like they've invested so much in this new ecosystem specifically, especially with what they've done with PS Plus and giving people all these free games. And, you know, it would just be kind of, I guess, backward to launch a console and then say, hey, all those hundreds of dollars and hours and time that you spent on all that other stuff, that doesn't mean anything going forward, like they did with the PS4 versus the PS3.
Yep.
Darn it. But I think, you know, that logic and then combined with the fact that Microsoft has made such a serious effort to encourage backwards compatibility all the way back to their first console has kind of forced Sony's hand. So first, I'm just curious what your guys' thoughts are about backwards compatibility on the PlayStation 5, being able to continue to play your PlayStation 4 titles. And then kind of just your perception of backwards compatibility in general. Is it something that you feel is important to the community or something that matters to you personally? Shane, what are your feelings on this?
For me, backwards compatibility is a huge, huge, huge plus. Like, even right now, I'm in a circumstance where I was limited on how many consoles I could bring with me to my latest move. And now I only have a PS4, despite the fact that I have a backlog of PS3 games I was meaning to get through with the extra time on my hands, but without so much space, I couldn't bring the PS3 itself, and thus that whole back catalog is shut out. So not having that on PS4 has been pretty inconvenient, and so being able to have that on the PlayStation 5, supposedly, would be a big benefit. And obviously, I do think, like you were saying before, going to PS4 to PS5, I think that's a given for backwards compatibility. They should be on the same like processor architecture.
Mm-hmm.
But this patent obviously allows the PS4's new processor to translate or be able to accommodate for the processes to emulate what is more of a PS3 processor or PS2, PS1, etc.
Yeah. I know that that was one of the biggest reasons why PlayStation 4 did not have backwards compatibility with 3, because 3's right. architecture was so strange that, it was kind of, it was just kind of crazy to, be able to emulate that at that time. I mean, even, like, the independent emulation scene is still trying to figure out game PlayStation 3 emulation on a game-by-game basis. They can't even just do, like, one blanket one and have most games work. They're, like, trying to figure out how each individual one makes sense, which is kind of hilarious and pretty revealing about just how backward or bizarrely that console was, like, set up. But certainly not something that I'm sure they'll have to deal with moving PlayStation 4 games forward.
Mm-hmm. But the fact that they also have... I think the most notable one is the fact that if they've got PS3 figured out with this patent, that would be really, really impressive and really relieving for a lot of people like myself who would love to have an all-in-one box from Sony. So
yeah, for sure. Mike, what do you think about...
So, like, as a person that has started with Sony at the PS4, basically, the lack of backward compatibility on the PS4 is basically, like, a non-issue for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically anything from PS3 era that I have ever been interested in playing, they have HD re-released.
Yeah.
Because they HD re-release literally everything now, even, like, a year after it has come out the first time. So... that hasn't been an issue for me up until now. What would bother me is if the PS5 came out and it didn't do backward compatibility with 4, because now I actually have this library of PS4 games.
Mm-hmm.
I actually basically don't have a back catalog because there's just such a manageable amount of PS4 games that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
But it always sucks when the new console comes out and... it becomes inconvenient to play all of the games from the last one.
Yeah.
As a person who had an Xbox for a long time, or was a predominantly an Xbox person, I still have both of them. Their backward compatibility, I thought, was like a really cool idea mm-hmm. when they did it. And I think I've used it exactly one time ever.
Really?
Because... what's really frustrating is a lot of the 360 games that I would want to be playing are not on the backward compatibility list. So I still have to drag out my 360 if I want to play those. Even there, it's like, okay, well, if this was universal, I would probably use it a lot because I obviously the 360 has a library that is ridiculously better than the Xbox One's library.
Sure. Yeah.
And if it actually was everything, I would probably use it a lot, but it's probably just bad luck on my part, but most of the stuff that I have wanted to play recently is just not on that list.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of interesting. I have sort of mixed opinions about this. I mean, obviously, I think it's like a blanket good thing for the community. People invest a lot of money and a lot of time and energy into these games, and... nothing sucks worse than if you, let's say, buy something digitally and then, you lose access to that or something.
Yep.
At least with something physical, you could throw it back into your system and it's all honky-dory. But, like, if you were to, if you were to, like, download something on your PlayStation 4 and then you want to play it on your PS5, it would be a shame that that's not the case. Part of the reason why I'm mixed on it is because, like... I don't know if it's clear at this time exactly what the backwards compatibility situation with PlayStation 5 will be, because as you said with Xbox One, they kind of had this rollout system where they would like only allow certain games to be backwards compatible at certain times.
They're still adding now.
Yeah.
It's like they're doing them on a one-by-one basis.
Yeah, and that's a little weird, because I'm of the mind where, like you said before, I'd kind of want, like, all or nothing, right? Like, just, all the stuff that I have, I want to be able to just, like, put it in. So when I have that feeling, that urge to play something, I kind of want that to be, like, an unrestricted experience.
And there's a lot of good stuff on the Xbox list. There's also a lot of, like, laughable garbage on it,
sure.
Which was clear that they were just like, well, this one's easy, so like like Kingdom for Keflings.
Was the first of the Kingdom ones too.
Just whatever. Like that sneaking that Burger King game.
Nobody's
like,
itching to play those games.
Sure, but like the Transformers games, no, definitely not.
Yeah,
can't have any of the Cybertron games.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if there's some kind of like licensing thing that they have to worry about with it.
Well, yeah, those games are all screwed up anyway. Yeah. But that was the last thing I dug my 360 out for was those two.
Yeah.
It's like, of course it's not backwards. I was going to play Red Dead Redemption. And no, not backward compatible. I had to buy it for Xbox One.
Bizarre.
And then I didn't ever play it because I got distracted by Bloodborne. But it's funny because I was so happy when Xbox announced it. And I've just never used it.
Yeah, and that's kind of the other end of it for me too, where it's like, I conceptually, I like the idea that exists, that's something that we'd be able to do. But whether or not I'd actually use something like that is kind of like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm not really sure how often I would actually make use of something like that, especially when like. There are certain games, like, I think back to games that I enjoyed on, like, the PS3, and, you know, if some of them were, like, more heavily, like, online-based or something, it's like, can you really expect, like, you know, the community for some obscure fighting game from, like, 10 years ago to still be active? Like, probably not, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So the usefulness case is a little weird for me. And then the other part that I'm, like, actually really interested to see how they're going to solve for this or what the solution will be is if there is full backwards compatibility for PlayStation 4, that inherently means that the controller that you're going to be using for the system is going to have a touchpad. Because weirdly enough, while most games now don't utilize it, there are certain PlayStation 4 exclusive titles that like use the touchpad in a pretty serious way. So like to the point where you wouldn't be able to progress in the game unless you're using the touchpad.
Because a lot of them just use it like it's another button.
Like it's an options button or a select button or something like that. But the first game that comes to mind for me is like Infamous Second Son, and that used it pretty extensively. Like to like for the spray painting stuff or whatever. Like it was strange. So my thought is like, does that essentially make PlayStation 5 a shoe-in to have a touchpad on the controller? Or would they take a solution like you would have to sync a DualShock 4 to the PlayStation 5? Like, I'm not really sure. Shane, what do you think? How do you think that they'd handle something like that?
Well, the other thing they could do, like, is have workarounds. So something like the Vita, it doesn't have two triggers. It has the back touchpad. Mm-hmm. And so what it had to do to get around to, like, old PlayStation 1 games that you can play on it is instead of having your second triggers, but you had to swipe on the back touchpad. So they figured out kind of a workaround with its control scheme for it to work. So if the PlayStation 5 has something, I don't know what that thing would be, but essentially, you know, hold down these two buttons and then use the joystick. And that will operate as the touchpad in these kinds of games. Yeah. They might have to think of a workaround like that. That does work with their current hardware.
The problem there would be
if they're going to opt away from a touchpad.
The issue there would be that those games for like the Vita are being ported to the Vita.
Yeah.
So they can change stuff like that. Whereas with backward compatibility, it's just running the old game.
Yeah.
So there's no actual extra effort going into rebinding the controls.
No.
And how many games on PlayStation have rebindable controls? Like 100%
but
rebindable.
It would be the controller config that's bound, not like per game. Like, you know how in Virtual Console, once you jump into Virtual Console, you can reset your button layout to Virtual Console.
Wii.
Not really specific to each game.
Mm. You say
or,
on like the
I
Wii
mean,
or something?
Yeah. So it would be more that, like, in Sony's emulation software, at least I assume
there would
be
some sort of, like, overlay or interface specifically for the controller.
Yeah, so that it could determine, like, you know, the input of touchpad this way, that way, whatever, is determined by this button presses, whatever. It would be a clunky way of going about it, unfortunately, and I do actually think that if you could just sync up a DualShock 4 to your PlayStation 5, that would be the easiest solution.
And I mean,
but they are going to have something there for people who only own a DualShock 5, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, on top of that, Sony is not exactly known for like radically changing its controllers between its different iterations, so yeah. It's probably not going to be that crazy different.
But I think it, if there's any like blanket, I guess you could say negative or blanket criticism of the PlayStation 4 that even the Sony like developers have acknowledged, is that the touchpad is an ultimately useless addition to that controller. Like, it was used very limited in a few games and then almost never again. Like, you can almost mark the point in time in the PlayStation 4's life cycle where games were just like, we're just not going to pay attention to this anymore, and we're literally just going to use it as an options button.
I think the only
everything
game...
after launch titles.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the only game I've ever used it in a way, like you know, in Bloodborne, it's two different buttons, like, depending on what side you click it opens one menu or the other. The only time I've ever used it as, like, a swipe is in God of War, because I set it to have no HUD.
Oh, when you
and
swipe
then when I swipe, the HUD comes up for, like, 5 seconds, and it goes away. And that was just because I wanted it to look nicer, but I still wanted access to my HUD.
Yeah.
That was not, like, a necessary
like a functional game element, yeah. Like, in something like the Infamous Second Son, it definitely was that. In Killzone, it definitely was that. You know, there are definitely some instances that come to mind that were primary uses for it. But definitely an interesting situation, and one that I'm certainly interested to see how they would solve for it.
Do you think that the touchpad even? I guess I'm trying to wonder like how much they like whether they would get rid of it, like how much does it cost to incorporate into the controller, or maybe not even just cost, but like, you know, is it worth having there? Would they continue on with that touchpad?
Yeah, I'm not even sure. I mean, like, they could find a more clever way to introduce it. You know what I mean? Like you know how on the Switch Pro controller, there's an NFC chip reader, like, on top of the controller? Like, they could even do something where just, like, on the controller just normally, if you touch anywhere that's not a button, that could technically be a touchpad. I mean, I'm not sure, but that would be a way to solve it. But yeah, I mean, it's cool to see that that Sony is at least paying attention to the greater gaming landscape, and they're trying to do something that's going to ultimately benefit, like, I mean, whether or not people even use it, it's still a net positive for their next console, and definitely a worthwhile thing for them to do.
Yep.
Yeah, no, here's the thing, in going into next gen, that, like, as we go forward with these, with further iterations of consoles, it's getting harder and harder to justify new hardware beyond just it's beefier, right?
Yeah.
So there does have to be some sort of new, I say new, but of course it's old, but some sort of feature to really entice you to not think this is PS4 Pro 2.
Oh, for sure. And I feel like every console, when it comes out, has some sort of gimmick to it. You know what I mean? Like, the Switch is literally the gimmick machine. I feel like for the PlayStation 4, it was this touchpad. I remember when the Xbox One came out, they had their haptic triggers, and individual triggers vibrate when you use them, you know?
Not to forget, the Xbox was the console that decided that their gimmicks should be negative things instead of positives. They're always online, and they're no rentable games.
Yes.
Force Connect. Oh, wait, no.
It'll be great once we get to the time where we start seeing those new marketing pitches and strategies they have for this stuff.
I both like enjoy and hate new console time.
Yeah,
because it's like, oh, and now I have to drop $400 to $700, whatever nonsense price it is.
Yeah,
and I never want to. But then you get all these good new games.
Yeah, I always kind of feel good about it just because it feels like, you know, the next stage has been unlocked. You know what I mean?
It's tough. It's tough for me because I predominantly play stuff really late.
Hence why you're playing Bloodborne
Which is why I'm playing Bloodborne right now.
Great transition into what we've been playing, which is going to open up into a greater games conversation, but let's start with just kind of like what's been taking up our time. Cool. So Potts, you've been very deep down the Bloodborne rabbit hole recently, haven't you?
So I always really liked Dark Souls. It's funny, I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I, I don't like playing Dark Souls, but I really like Dark Souls, and I like watching Dark Souls, and I like the lore of Dark Souls and everything about it, but I don't like playing it. And I don't know exactly why I decided that was the case. I think I only really tried it once and not for enough time.
Yeah.
And it was the first Dark Souls, and I never really gave it a shot after that. And I finally was just like, you know what, this is really dumb that these games are so good and I enjoy them so much and I don't play them. And also, I'm running out of, like, PS4 exclusives to play at this point because I spent all last year burning through the Essentials PS4 library.
Yeah.
So, okay, Bloodborne is, like, $20, and it's different, and it's really cool, and it's like Lovecraftian, and I'm into that. So let me give this a shot. And I totally love it.
Yeah.
I totally love it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm pretty sure I'm playing it wrong because I think I accidentally over-leveled myself pretty early in the game and then just tanked my way through a lot of, like, the stuff that you're probably supposed to be getting better before you beat. But I'm still having a lot of fun, and I don't really care.
Yeah, I would say...
That's a decent way to play it wrong.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, as long as you're progressing in a way that makes you feel, like, comfortable and happy, then you're absolutely playing the game right.
I was so upset at the beginning when it took me, like, 3 or 4 hours, and I was still not getting past this, like, that big bonfire at the beginning where they're burning the werewolf.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I remember I was like, I need to take a break. I'm gonna watch the Game Grumps play through for, like, the first 2 episodes or whatever. And he blows through that, and I'm like, I suck. My life is over. I'm never gonna beat this game. And he was like, I know that I'm making this look really easy right now, but I just want everybody to know that this took me 4 hours when I first played it. And I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, thank God. And then, you know, you just get better and better and you get more familiar with it. But I think because of all of the, like, dicking around at the beginning that I did because I was too afraid to, like, progress, I just started that snowball of being way higher a level than I needed to
be.
Because, like, every challenging boss in the main game, for the most part, was not challenging at all.
Yeah.
To me. Like, you know, 2, 3, 4 tries.
Yeah,
not,
yeah,
like, 25. 30. Like, Rom, I think I killed on try 3.
Well, it's a lot of, like, finding the right rhythm, you know what I mean? Like, you get into a boss and you kind of have to, like, observe and get used to, like, what they're capable of before you can start, like, reacting to it correctly, you know?
See, a lot of them, I just, like, ran in and tanked them.
Yeah.
Because I was just stronger. But which is why I really started to appreciate hunter fights, because you can't really do that.
Yeah.
It's much faster. Like, I actually started to find the beast fights to be kind of boring,
mm-hmm,
because it's the Dark Souls, like, I'm gonna run in a circle around you and, like, get right up on your balls and hit you, and you can't really do anything about
it. Yeah, yeah.
There's
a boss in Dark Souls 3 that's literally
up the tree. Yeah. but you can tank your way through a lot of that too. But with the hunters, it really encourages you to be, like, very dexterous and, like, be bouncing all over the place, and that's really fun. Maria of the Astral Clock Tower is, like, the best fight in that game.
Yeah.
So fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And after one of the stupidest fights in that game, the Living Failures, like, immediately after you walk through the door and boom, there's Maria. And I was like, oh, this is so much better. This is so, it's so hard.
Yeah, I think they put those bosses back to back specifically for that reason.
Yeah, and then I nearly killed myself in the fishing hamlet. That really, like, the game up until right around those areas hadn't really been all that difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I hit a brick wall. And then the fishing hamlet was like, they set the brick wall on fire.
Yeah.
And then there was another brick wall, and they, like, crushed me between those two brick walls. Those sharks, man.
It's like, kind of hilarious to me to hear you having these, like, revelations about this game.
Which, like, is, like, 5 years,
like,
old.
Like, literally 5 years after the fact. It's, like, kind of hilarious.
You know what's really funny, though, is that I guess it was free on PS Plus a while ago before I had PS Plus.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you go on the Bloodborne Reddit, there is every single day there's people that are, like, playing this game for the first time.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand this. Playing this game for the first time. How do you do this? So it's cool that, like, now I know all the answers to these things. And I was that person like a couple months ago.
Yeah, or for sure.
I guess 1 month ago.
It's just funny. I remember when you first like mentioned it. So like, I know the last time we were on this podcast, I mentioned my game wall, and I'm looking at my PS4 games, and I have four shelves of them. And I've been fairly like active as far as like getting every game like as they come out. Yeah. And I'm like, I remember you being like, yo, I'm playing Bloodborne, and I'm looking at my shelf, I'm like, where the fuck is Bloodborne? And it's like just a few in on the first shelf.
Yeah,
like,
all the way at the bottom.
It is like right at the beginning of that console's life cycle. Like that game came out before, and Shane, you'll appreciate some of these. That game came out before Metal Gear Solid 5. It came out before Until Dawn.
It came out before Dark Souls 3, which I didn't realize for
It
a
came
while.
Out before Street Fighter 5. How about that? Like,
what year?
It was an old-ass game. 2015?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it was I think it was either 2015 or 2016.
15, then.
Yeah, and I don't know. I'm currently... let's see. I killed the Orphan of Kos with help because, Jesus, there was no way I was doing... I tried. I really tried.
Yeah.
It was not going to happen. And I summoned, like, for fun. I was like, you know what? I've never summoned against a boss the entire time I've played this game. Let me just bring somebody in and, like, see what happens. I'm sure we won't kill it.
Easy mode, dude.
And I got this dude, like... Batman 3565356, you know, lots of numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
And he proceeded to obliterate the Orphan.
Yeah.
Like, he handled it. I did nothing
Dude,
in that fight.
Here's the thing.
He melt. But hold on. It gets better.
Yeah.
After doing that, I did that and I was like, okay, I'm in shock. That was crazy. That's not what I intended to happen. I'm going to take a break. So again, for whatever reason, I've been watching the Game Grumps play through as I, like, this stuff up to where I am.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, a good way to, like, deflate after playing it.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're fighting some boss in and around that area, and they summon, and it's the fucking Batman guy.
Wow.
It's the same dude.
That's hilarious.
And I went on the Reddit, and I was like, this is just a funny thing that happened, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And the comments are like, that dude's ranked number 5 in the world.
Wow.
In Dark Souls. That dude's crazy. Like, yeah, I've been looking for that guy for 5 years. I've been trying to summon him in. And I was like, are you fucking kidding
That's
me?
That's too funny, man. Dude, that's crazy. Like, just like a more blanket statement. Like, to me personally, and I know that there's some divided opinions about this, but I'm very much of the mind that when you summon people in Dark Souls or Bloodborne, it's literally turning the game on easy mode. It becomes an infinitely more approachable and simple process, which is why, and he's not here to defend himself, so sorry about it, but this is why I have very little respect for Justin Chow and Alex Shock's game in Bloodborne or Dark Souls, because they always play through the game co-op.
Together.
And it's like, dude,
it's
not how the game was intended to be played, but like the level of skill that you need to beat the game in a co-op setting, like in perpetuity,
it's
totally different.
I will say for myself, like, despite being, and I don't think I was insanely over leveled. I think I was like kind of over, like, I'm still getting killed by bosses. I'm not like 40 levels over where I should be.
Sure.
But I refused to summon ever until that point, and I get number 5 ranked, whatever.
And just...
of course, and he had the pizza cutter. And he just melted him.
Yeah.
He just rolled up, bzzz, and like 3 or 4 times, and the thing was dead.
Yeah.
But after that, I'm at the point now where I have everything done except the final boss, the 3 iterations of the final boss, and I'm grinding my way through the Chalice Dungeons, which I hate because they take everything good about that game and they strip it away and they make it incredibly boring and terrible. I've summoned for...
I never touched the Chalice Dungeons.
They're the worst, but you need them for the Platinum.
Yeah.
They are the worst. But I have summoned for many a boss in the Chalice Dungeons because, frankly, I don't think that they count.
They definitely count, but
I don't care.
I understand what you mean.
There's no way I was killing that flaming dog by myself.
The dog and the flaming sword guy are ridiculously hard.
And I'm at the point now, I killed the sword guy by myself.
Yeah.
I will say that because I like hunter fights. But I'm at the point now where I'm fed up with the Chalice Dungeons to the point where I just want them to be over. so I can get back to like the real game. And I've done everything except the final boss, but so I'm just kind of checked out with the Chalice Dungeons, and I just want them to be done.
Yeah.
So if I am having a hard time, I'm summoning, and that's it. Now, I made the mistake of summoning against Amygdala, and the dude that I summoned sucked, so he died immediately, and then I have an Amygdala that's way stronger because it's assuming that there's two people. And I did that 3 times in a row, and then I just decided, I'm just going to handle this myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where I currently am.
Shane, what was your experience with Bloodborne? Were you co-oping it through, or no?
I went through the whole main game by myself. That said, I did have like ancillary sideline help to kind of ease me into, because that was my first Soulsborne.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had a friend kind of helping me be like, okay, yeah, you died here, but you can do this thing. Oh, you know, you're going to want to hit a shortcut here. But just to ease me into, out of the frustrations, the early frustrations.
Sure, sure.
Otherwise, going through the game solo. And then with that same friend, when the DLC hit, we just co-opted that because it was like, let's just get you through it. Let's just play it.
Yeah,
yeah. At that point, it wasn't the need for, like, really, you know, test your merit for it, so.
For sure, for sure. Now, Potts, we were also playing another new game, but we're going to wait on that until the end, because it's probably the most topical game for right now.
The game that is the reason why I haven't killed Amygdala at time of recording this.
Yes.
Maybe.
But before we get into that, Shane, I'm curious what you're playing, because I think we've had similar experiences as well. I think I play too many games, guys.
I've been playing a few games here and there. A lot of Final Fantasy XIV, actually. Just finally starting to climb up the ranks in there. I'm past a level cap for the original Realm Reborn, so
nice.
Did you Heaven's Sword levels, did you beat but the story not content the main story quest yet.
Oh, you didn't beat the main story quest, okay.
Not yet, because main story quest is kind of a slog. Yeah. So, trying to... It's starting to pick up a little bit better.
You know,
so we're making our way through.
And just a brief aside, you know that you should not do your relic weapon quest, correct?
I don't know what a relic weapon is, so.
Okay, well, you're at the point in the game where you will potentially find your relic weapon quest. If you haven't, I would honestly Google your character type, like the class that you are. And Google, like, archer class relic weapon or whatever, and just see what the quest name is, and don't do it. Because, when A Realm Reborn came out, your relic weapon was the best, most top-tier, amazing weapon you could possibly get. But then the second Heaven's Ward came out, the first weapon you get in Heaven's Ward is better than your relic weapon. But the relic weapon...
Yeah.
Yeah. But the relic weapon quest is, like, unbelievably frustrating and time-consuming and ridiculous to do. You have to, like, get all these whack-ass materials from all over the world, and it takes all kinds of ridiculous effort. I would save yourself, like, if you're anything like me, where you're just like, well, I need to complete all the quests in my quest log, because they're the quests in my quest log, right? Do not do your relic weapon quests, and don't tell any of your friends to do theirs. Like, tell every one of your classmates to find what their relic weapon quest is, and don't do it.
Yeah, okay, alright. I'll probably avoid it till level cap of Stormblood then, and then when I'm out of shit to do, I might go clean it up.
I feel you, because I am the same type of person. I'm just telling you, you're talking tens of hours to do this shit. It is dumb. It is so stupid. And it's a weapon that you will literally never use. You will literally never use it, because the next weapon that you get when you do the expansion content is better than it. So there is literally no reason to do it.
Speaking of really stupid endgame stuff to do in a Final Fantasy game, one of the other things I was really recently playing was Final Fantasy XV.
I did see you playing that, and I was like, what are you doing?
I was at a point where it was like, I'm playing through, we'll get to this conversation, but Resident Evil 2, I've been playing through it, but I've also been playing through it with Erica as my audience, and so when she's not available to actually watch, I'm like, okay, I gotta play something else, and I'm looking at my catalog, and I'm like, I need one trophy for frickin' Final Fantasy XV Platinum, and then I can stop having it in my immediate-to-play
The Adamantoise one? You know
what? All right, let's get this done.
The Adamantoise?
The Adamantoise is the last one.
Yeah.
But I'm not trying him yet because I'm like, well, I'm level 100, but the level cap is level 120, and that guy takes forever to take down, so I'm going to go do the rest of those, like, Menace in the Deeps side or end game quests.
Okay.
And most of them, they're all very tedious. But this last one, I didn't realize what I got myself into, but it's 100 floors of shitty enemies. Hardest in the game. And it took, like, 3 hours just to do this one dumb little dungeon.
Ah. You're saying, yeah. You definitely don't need to be max level to do Adamantoise. It's an easy fight. It's an easy fight. You don't need any items to do it. It just takes a very long time. He's just a damage sponge.
See, what were they thinking with that game's, like, end game?
Dude, I don't know.
It's so lazy.
Dude, I don't know. Also, you just reminded me of another Final Fantasy XIV tip.
Okay.
Once you start to get access to the raids and stuff like that, like the near end game raids, you're going to see one that's going to immediately interest you called the Coils of Bahamut, right? And it's a tower to fight Bahamut. Again, I'm going to tell you something you don't want to hear. Don't do it. Do not do the Coils of Bahamut. There are four of them. They are incredibly long and incredibly difficult. And when I say incredibly difficult, I mean, like, takes an ungodly amount of precision and coordination amongst your team. I'm pretty sure you also need 16 players to do them, which is ridiculous. But then on top of that, all of the armor sets that you get from it become immediately useless upon playing the first mission in Heaven's Ward. So just don't even waste your time. It's just not even worth it. It's just, it will do nothing for you. Plus, at this stage in the game, if you tried to, like, queue for that dungeon, you would wait your whole life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm interested in seeing how the 16 mans, and I think they go further than that, don't they?
Yeah, so actually, like the last story mission for, like, the first section of A Realm Reborn is, I believe, a 16-man raid, and it's awesome. Like, the final mission of like, the main game is so cool. Like, it's a very healthy amount of game. Like, what you're doing is awesome. You get a new mount, which is super cool. Like, there's a lot of really amazing things that happen on that last mission. Like, I would seriously look forward to that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, no. Final Fantasy XIV currently, like, needing to fight the last primal Garuda, the wind one.
Yeah. Cool fight.
Leading up to, I think, that raid.
Hard, but cool fight.
Mm-hmm. And now, but that's the side game while I've been playing through Resident Evil 2.
Yeah.
So that's been the big ticket game. Had to wait a little bit extra, a few extra days for it to come into the mail. But now I'm digging my claws into it. I ended up, like, replaying the original Resident Evil 2 on my Vita while I was waiting for it to come in.
Oh, nice.
And so I'm glad I was able to do that because now I was able to directly compare between the differences from the original to Leon A.
Yeah.
Because I've only finished Leon A's campaign. But it's cool. Some of the changes that they made, pretty cool. Some of the changes that they made, kind of questionable.
I'd be interested to hear what you had to say. Disclaimer first, Potts, do you care about story spoilers or anything with Resident Evil 2 Remake?
Literally not at all.
Excellent. Okay, so I would be very curious about what some of these, what some of your compliments and criticisms of this game would be. Because I personally think that this game is a freaking work of art. And, like, everybody, like, I don't know a single person that plays video games that should sleep on this game. Like, it is so good and appeals to so many different types of people. Like Potts, as much as you don't care about spoilers, you would fucking love Resident Evil 2. It is better.
Yeah.
I would motion this. It is better than Resident Evil 4. It is currently the best Resident Evil game that exists. It is better than every Resident Evil game that's ever existed, I would say.
I have I think I played the original two a little bit. I know it's completely different.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't really care about spoilers, because I think I already have a decent idea. Especially when 4 and 5 were out, I was super into like the ridiculous lore. So yeah. I think I have a good idea of what happens. I kind of like 4 and 5 because they're dumb action movies.
Dude, 2 is that game now.
But it's like...
But it's better.
It's like scary.
But it's also like... ridiculous.
It's got just dumb action stuff.
Dude, Leon S. Kennedy is the dumbest cop on Earth. He is like so laughably ridiculous in this game that it's like almost like endearing how stupid he is. Like, he walks into...
You warned me that it only works on humans, not reptiles.
Dude, he walks into a gas station and he looks to his right and he sees a police car with its doors blasted open and blood everywhere. And then he's like... Something strange is going on here.
Yeah.
And then continues to pump his own gas while it's happening. And it's just like, what? Like the most absurd things happen. It's so funny. Like,
For some reason, I recently wanted to play Resident Evil 6.
Yeah.
I never played it.
Yeah.
It's
a bad game. It's not fun.
No, I know.
No,
I know.
Not even like a dumb action movie.
It's a terrible game.
I actually had it and I never opened
it. No, I 100% disagree to that, but all right.
I had it and I never opened it and I traded it in. And for some reason I was like, I wonder if I should play Resident Evil 6.
No,
probably not.
Yeah.
Probably not. But
nah,
yeah,
do it.
I don't know.
I'm just gonna let you borrow it, and you should just play it.
Yeah.
Just give it a shot. I think you would like it.
If you're gonna play that game, just play it co-op. That is the main way to enjoy it, because if you're not enjoying the game itself, you might be in... I played it with a friend where a lot of the entertainment value was his own misery coming from the game.
Yeah,
so,
it's
still worth playing for that.
I think what sparked this is I recently watched one of the YouTubers I follow, I don't remember who, you know, game analysis guy, said that he, like, 6 is his favorite Resident Evil.
I know exactly the video you're talking about, yeah.
Because he played it with his friend, and all they did the entire time was talk about how terrible it was and how hysterically, like, funny and dumb it is.
See, it's like, I played that game with, like, genuine, like, interest, and I felt like it was just such a colossal waste of time. But anyway, we're talking about Resident Evil 2.
Yeah, go back to 2.
I think there's a valid statement in Resident Evil 2 is the best Resident Evil and does even oust 4. And I think a lot of that is it's so thoughtfully structured.
Yeah.
Resident Evil 4, you know, it's a lot of fun. But you literally go from this locale to that locale to that locale in a linear structure, goes chapter by chapter, tells you chapter end. I'm not criticizing 4, it's just that's its structure. But Resident Evil 2, and in the remake where they lovingly recreate it, the way that everything is interconnected and designed to flow, and how they give you these... It always feels in a Resident Evil game that the environment that they set you in is a puzzle in and of itself, and you're just kind of solving the big puzzle of the area. And in the original, that was obviously the police station, and then you got kind of a segue chapter with the sewers. Let's be honest, it was not that long.
Yeah.
And then that led into the finale of the lab underground, and it was a mini area.
Yeah, yeah.
And they expanded on that greatly in this one.
Mm-hmm. It's paced so well through that too, where it's like the police station is definitely the meat of the game. Like, you mm-hmm. spend more time in the total length of the game in the police station than anywhere else in the game. I feel like it ramps itself up nicely, because it's like in the police station you're mm-hmm. like getting your feet wet, you're understanding what the game is, you're like, okay, like this is how I play this is how I solve puzzles, this is how I should be conscious of my ammo and all this sort of stuff. And then once you get into the sewers, you're like hit with all these curveballs, and that's probably when you're hit with the biggest like dump of story, like how it establishes the characters and the greater issues that are happening in the world and all this sort of stuff, which then brings you to the labs, which I think the labs are just such a beautifully concentrated like segment of the game, where it's like the second you enter them, you know exactly how long it's going to be, and it's like it's just so perfectly like organized and like truncated that it's like it just feels like it's like the culmination of what the like final realization of the game is supposed to be. Just brilliant. Just fucking brilliant.
I loved walking on those catwalks and just seeing that area.
Yeah.
It was like, wow. Yeah. This looks so cool. What was I going to say?
We're talking about highs and lows.
I don't really have much in the way of low points.
Okay.
You know what? Okay. I do have a few. First things first, was structurally, I had a problem with playing as Ada and playing as Sherry.
Okay.
And the reason is, and I actually had a bigger problem with this as Ada than I had as Sherry, and I didn't think that it's that if you play their segments, you're almost guaranteed to die until you figure out what you're supposed to do first.
I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that.
Because with Ada's section, you have to follow, like, lines in the walls with her, like, special...
like ray gun or whatever?
Equipment. To control power flow of things. Great, cool. Except that, you know, I have to stop and analyze and investigate the walls, follow these things, while I'm being chewed up by a zombie, or chased by Tyrant, or something.
Yeah.
Or a segment where you're...
Again, literally timed.
Spoiler territory, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, they're timed, like... the incinerator, I got burnt out before I could figure out what exactly I had to do. Oh, yeah,
I think everybody on their first playthrough is going to.
But to me, like, if you have these segments structured where it's like, you pretty much have to die before you figure out the puzzle, I don't find that nearly as fun, and I didn't have that problem throughout the rest of the game, so it showed in Ada's portion that, like... You had to play through the section bit at a time, dying, figuring out what you had to do in order to actually get through those.
Trial and error.
So, yeah. And, I don't know. That bugged me a little bit. Especially when the rest of the game, even if I made a big slip up, I could keep persevering.
I think that's valid. Yep. But I feel like those sections are short enough where it's like, it's not so egregious that it made me like... I don't think that those instances made me have less fun because... they were a bit trial and error. It was just kind of like, okay, that's just what it is. And at the very least, I knew that once I was done with it, I knew that I was actually done with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I can't complain about them too hard, but they were one of the few things that bugged me through what ultimately is really, really strong pacing throughout this whole game. What else? These aren't complaints, it's just some weird... Well, actually, one of them is a complaint, but kind of the seeing a few of the things that they decided to omit or change in this one.
Like?
Such as Ada's whole purpose being in the facility. This isn't a criticism, this is just noting a change. Instead of her backstory of being like, oh, I'm looking for my boyfriend, John, and being dressed in a gown... because she's trying to blend in as a normal woman. She's trying to blend in as an FBI agent now.
Yeah.
And it does make me wonder, because I thought they were going to take it two routes. I thought she was going to first cover as FBI, and then after it'd be like, oh, I'm actually John's boyfriend, and then, oh, actually.
Yeah. I feel like the way that they handled the story kind of, like, made sense. And it honestly made her transition, like... Like, if you think of her transition from the original Resident Evil 2 to 4, it makes almost no sense. But this version of her totally makes sense between this and 4. So
they're able to portray that attitude from her right off the get-go.
Yeah.
And it's more consistent rather than having an entire game where she's, like, fibbing a certain persona only to be like, aha, at the end I'm actually a totally different person, and now going forward in the series I'm that person.
Yeah. I'm with you.
But one, not getting it, oh man, okay, for one thing that I love that they changed was Kendo.
Both his
placement in the story and what they did with him.
Yeah, and we should be seeing some DLC with him later that kind of, like, expands his story, which is going to be pretty cool. One thing that I think, like, mechanically that cannot be understated, and this is probably why I would say... if you enjoyed Resident Evil 4, you would probably enjoy this game even more so them, is like, while 4 is fun and was the first game to kind of like really nail over the shoulder shooting, you know, definitely not the first one to do it, but the one that every other game emulated after that, it became very formulaic after a while, where it's like, okay, so I shoot the guy in the head, I run up, I kick him, and then I knife him to death. And I do that every single time throughout the entire fucking game, right? Yep. And that sort of became the mentality in every other over-the-shoulder shooter since then. But in Resident Evil 2 Remake, they, like, your interactions with zombies and other characters is, like, so head and shoulders above any sort of enemy interaction that exists in a game to date. Like, these zombies are not... They're not like any enemy you've ever experienced before. Like, you will shoot them, and they will never, ever, ever react the same way, like, throughout the entire game. Like, you will never shoot a zombie in the head and, like, know, like, it's going to take 3 shots to kill this zombie, like, if I shoot him in the head. Like, that's not the case at all. And it's not like, I'm going to shoot him in the leg and they're going to fall down and then I can kick them. Like, no, that's not going to happen. Like, ever, like, they react so, like, naturally and fluidly that it makes you kind of, like, always have to be alert when you're fighting them. Because, like, there were occasions, and I mentioned this on the podcast with the other guys, but, like, there was an occasion in the game where, like, I am approaching Resident Evil 2 like a video game, right? And in video game logic, if I'm standing in a room and there's a table in the middle of the room and there's an enemy on the other side of the table, I can shoot that enemy and assume that they are going to walk around the table to come get me, right? Mm-hmm. No. I shot this thing, and then it leapt onto the table, knocked all the shit off, and then I'm like, wait, what the fuck? And then it falls on the ground and starts, like, rapidly, like, crawling towards me, and I'm just, like, over here, like, shooting like crazy, and that just, like, so caught me off guard, because I'm like, that is not at all how I would have expected this enemy to work or, like, function at all, and it felt so, like, fresh. I was like, wow, this is, like, a shooting game that actually feels, like, new and different and is, like, forcing me to really, like, focus in a way that I've never done before.
Even when it doesn't come down to a combat encounter, just, an evasive encounter, it's so hard to predict.
Yeah.
In some of the older, like, replaying 2 before going into the 2019 one, I was able to be like, yeah, okay, I shuffle my body into this end of the corner, the zombies walk towards me, and then I circle around them. They're predictable.
Yeah.
Whereas in this one, I'm like, okay, I'm practicing that, but they're doing like a zigzag, and I'm like, and then I try to get around, but then he like twists and lunges back and grabs me by the back, and I'm like, God damn it, like, yeah. I can't even get past you.
Yeah.
It's just so unpredictable.
Yeah, and even how you like shoot them. So in Resident Evil 4, and 5, the common complaint is, why can't I move and shoot at the same time, you know? And while this game does allow you to move and shoot, like, naturally, but there's also a very logical, like...
reason to stop.
Yeah, like there's a logical reason to not do that, because yeah. It's like, if you're side-strafing while aiming to shoot something, obviously your aim's going to be fucked up. Yep. So, like, in this game, it's like, if you stop moving, you'll see your reticle kind of, like, hone in on somebody, and you'll be able to make precise shots much more easily. Like, you can still sort of make precise shots while you're moving, but it's like, you know, it kind of encourages you to play in a certain way, but it doesn't necessarily restrict you like those other games did, you know? Mm-hmm. It's smart. It's smart is what it is.
Yeah, no, it's great that they were, because the thing with Resident Evil 4 is they knew that with a third-person shooter that, you know, they couldn't have the same dumb zombies, so they had to have better AI, they had to have more enemies on screen, and they had to make it, so you had more to shoot at. That was kind of the main big gameplay crux now, was yeah. The shooting. In this one, they've gotten past those growing pains of, like, making shooting feel good. They know how to do that now. They've had a couple of games to make that work.
Yeah.
And now it's like, okay, how do we make the enemies work with this now? Because before they had the enemies tuned, like you said, very predictable. They were tuned to a certain way. They run up to you and then they slow down to give you a certain amount of time to actually fire at them.
Yeah, it's like a glorified shooting gallery almost.
Mm-hmm. Where now, like, they're like, okay, this is your ability set. Here's their unpredictable ability set, like, try and hit them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's smart. It's cool.
So I have what I think is an interesting question that I would like to hear both of your answers to then.
Yes.
This is just where my line of thought went. You're talking about like how good the gameplay of this is and how everything works. So Resident Evil 8 comes out.
Yeah.
Do you want it to be like 7 or like 2?
It's a hard question, man. It's a really hard question. And which, I mean, honestly, this is kind of why I was surprised that 2 was the way that it was, because I felt like 7 was such a success. Like, they did something new with the franchise that was so, like, novel, that made it, like, cool and new, that I was like, well, why are they, like, reverting, you know, in Resident Evil 2, right? But I think the reason why they had to do that, now that I've kind of been able to, like, sit with it for a little while, is, like, the characters are so important to that game. Like, you need to see them. You need to know that you're that character. You know what I mean? So I feel like that made the third-person perspective make sense for 2. But I don't know. I'd be fine with them continuing first-person in 8. I feel like that to me is, like, the logical trajectory of this franchise. I mean, Shane, what do you think?
I think... It is going to depend on what their setting is, because it's like you said, like I've seen some videos about people putting a first person mod on Resident Evil 2 Remake, and I was like, oh cool, wow, it does look a lot like Resident Evil 7 now. And then as I'm looking, I'm like, it also looks a lot more depersonalized, because there's no Leon. It feels like I'm taking a guided tour through recreated RPD City Hall instead of playing Resident Evil Remake 2, right?
Yeah.
So if they go into Resident Evil 8 with us playing a series favorite, then first person, I think, is going to be a bad idea. But that said, like, it worked really well for 7 because we went in with a newcomer and it was all about being fresh and new. But I think what's most important is that, I guess, to me, the perspective doesn't matter. I wouldn't mind if they keep going with first person, because it worked really well with 7. And, you know, it's kind of a new direction for the main line. So that's, I would not mind if it went first person. But I think they've proven with both 7 and 2 now that the perspective doesn't even matter. It's the design philosophies that matter. Because they made it work with 7. They've made it work with 2 now. They've kind of re-honed in on what Resident Evil is supposed to be. And it doesn't really matter where your camera is. I know that doesn't answer your question of what I'd like to see the next one as. I'm going to say first person, personally, just because I kind of like seeing that split trend of them having Resident Evils that are third person and having Resident Evils that are first person.
Yeah, I think we definitely won't have to make the decision, thankfully, because I think they're seeing incredible success with the remake of 2, that they're definitely going to remake 3, and I think it's definitely going to lead into a remake of 4. I think that's probably...
I'm not so sure about the 4th remake.
What's that?
I guess I was just saying, I'm not so sure about remaking 4.
No, 4 was the most popular game in the series. Period. Bar none. Like, end of story. Like,
I would play it.
Precisely why I see remaking it as such a weird decision to do.
It's dated, like, at this point. If you go back and play that game, it's horrible. Super dated. Like, that game would probably...
Even if they just HD remade it. Like, just for the sake of it looking better, because it looks horrendous.
I mean, even like the 60 FPS versions that are on PC and and like PS4 and whatnot now.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I feel like this, them going to 2 to remake is eventually leading to that. Like, that will be an unbelievably well received game, and from a business perspective, it just makes sense.
And they would hopefully stop at that and not also remake 5.
Yeah, I don't think there's any love for 5 or 6, unfortunately.
The thing is about those games is that they may be dated now, but they're also past a certain point in presentation where the importance of a remake starts to fall short. The reason that you have to go back and recreate a game like Resident Evil 2 is because the presentation was limited for its time, like limited in its capacity. If they remake, like Resident Evil 2 Remake is an entirely different game telling the same tale as Resident Evil, the original. Resident Evil 4, if they literally just, you know, are going at the same beats, having higher res models of Leon and Ada and everyone just in the game, doing the same things with new voice acting, with new... Like, then it just comes down to, like, they're both presentable. Which do you like better?
I mean, they did it with Dark Souls.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, there's remakes and remasters of definitely new age games, so I don't think that it has anything to do with the date, but I'd imagine that it would get a similar, like, full-on remake sort of treatment like Resident Evil 2 did. I feel like that's just logical at this point. And they've, like, Capcom has proven that this is a monetarily beneficial, you know, type of thing to do, so...
With something like Dark Souls, though, like, that kind of remake or remaster, whatever you want to define it as, like, it's in a brand new engine, so I'm not going to discredit it as, like, not a remake. You know what? Shadow of the Colossus remake might be a good example here.
Yeah.
Because that's a remake, sure, and I get that. But structurally, it is the same game. And they've recreated every cutscene. They didn't reimagine anything to it. They've recreated every single cutscene. So if you just mean, like, porting Resident Evil 4 to the RE engine, it's completely recreated in their new engine, I can see that, but, like, new voice work and new cutscenes, I don't know if they need to go that route.
I don't know.
I would buy it, and I feel like 10 billion other people would probably buy it also.
I guess time will tell for sure. But we are running a bit long, and there's definitely one more game that I want to talk about beforehand. Before we jump into that, just to gauge the feeling of the room, what's everybody's status with Kingdom Hearts? Is that something that we even want to discuss here?
I don't have any discussion to have with you because I haven't played it, but I did kind of want to hear what your thoughts are because I know you finished it, I think, today.
Let me ask you this. Are you intending to play it?
Yep.
Do you have any sort of reservations about hearing about things in the game?
So, do you mean spoilers specifically?
Well, even if I wanted to spoil the story for you, I couldn't because it makes no fucking sense.
Yeah, okay.
Reveal elements of the game, like the scope of the game. What I would tell you would be considered a spoiler. Yes.
Interesting. Like, it gives me an idea of how much game I really have in front of me.
Yes. Let's bypass it for now. Let's say I finished the game. It was certainly a game.
you were unhappy when you were describing it last night.
Yeah, it's... listen, it's not a bad game by any means. It did not reach my expectations. But here's the thing. I don't really know what my expectations were. So it's kind of hard to, actually say anything like that. But I have a few very pointed, very specific problems with the game that I want to discuss, but I will hold them for another time. But until that time comes, and they're very personal, you know what I mean? These things may not affect most people that are playing the game, but to me personally, it's like, it bothered me, right? So I guess you can look forward to hearing my opinions about that at a later time. But... one game to wrap us up. The game that I wanted to speak briefly on is Apex Legends, which Mike and I got a chance to try yesterday. This is the new hottest battle royale style game to hit the market. It's trying to give Fortnite a run for its money. Basically, it's a game developed by Respawn, published by EA. Takes place in the Titanfall universe, but has very little to do with those games,
basically nothing to do with them.
Yeah. Sans Titans.
it is in the Titanfall 2 engine, but it doesn't, for the most part, it doesn't really play like Titanfall 2.
What's your hot take right now? What are your, like, first brush impressions
as somebody who prestige 10'd in Titanfall 2?
Sure.
and then bought it on another console and then prestiged again.
How about as someone who plays video games? What is your feeling on it?
I would say it's fun and has absolutely no longevity to it whatsoever.
Do you think even in a multiplayer sense?
Well, I would say it's I would say it's almost unplayable if you're not in a multiplayer sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for all intents and purposes, it is literally unplayable.
Meaning, like, if you don't have two other dudes on your headset, two other people on your headset,
yeah,
I can't imagine playing more than a couple, like a handful of games before I was just like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, it is a drastically different experience playing the way that you're supposed to play it with, like, actual communication and cooperation.
Yeah.
It's just, like, don't get me wrong, obviously, got a lot of love for Titanfall and a lot of love for Respawn. It's, like, my favorite game ever. But it's just looking at it,
mm-hmm.
it's boring.
Yeah.
Like, look at Fortnite, and it's like, there is so much happening.
Yeah.
And so much weird, interesting, crazy nonsense happening. It's why I never understood why people play PUBG.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like...
It doesn't look like anything.
The game looks like garbage, and it doesn't play that well. But it's, like, interesting because it has this new gameplay element.
Yeah.
But then stuff like Fortnite comes out, and that's when I stop... Like, I don't understand why you're playing... And, like, I don't play Battle Royale games, so, like... You know, don't at me. Like, to me, Fortnite looks far more interesting than PUBG does.
Yeah.
And while I can understand, like, okay, I want a Battle Royale game that isn't super kiddie and colorful, then this is fantastic for that.
Yeah.
But, like, you know what it really reminds me of is, what's that 3 versus 1 monster versus 3 people
Evolve.
Hunting? Evolve. Oh. It reminds me of Evolve. It looks super generic.
Yeah, it's
completely
like,
serviceable, is fun to play for 10 seconds, and then immediately just is like, I don't know why I'm still playing this.
To me, it like feels really good. Like,
yeah, it does.
I've had a lot of experience with PUBG specifically because I was kind of like allured by, you know, the Battle Royale style of game.
It was the big thing for a while.
Yeah, and like Apex Legends is now trying to be the more like refined, I guess, like AAA-ish Battle Royale.
AAA PUBG.
And I think it totally hits that because it's a very nice feeling shooter. It's extremely, I would say, pretty simple to get into. Like, there's not really that much going on with it. Like, with Fortnite, I tried to play Fortnite, but there's quite a lot that you have to kind of, like, drink in. Like, you have to build things and all this stuff. Like, there's a lot to it.
Too much.
Apex Legends is just, like, you're just shooting stuff. The name Apex Legends is also terrible, by the way.
That's the other thing. It's like, generic, name. Like, Evolve. It's just super generic and, like, forgettable. I think the absolute best way to describe it before we discuss it more is if they made PUBG in the Titanfall 2 engine and then smashed Overwatch into it.
Yeah.
That would basically be it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Like, I have full disclosure, have not played the game, and what I'm about to relate it to, I also haven't played, so this is pretty invalid, but what it looks like on surface level to me is a Battle Royale version of like, Lawbreakers.
Yeah, essentially, like, how Lawbreakers was trying to be, like, the matured version of Overwatch, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, the Overwatch for, like, edgy people. Like, Apex Legends is trying to do that for the Battle Royale scene right now, and I'd say pretty successfully. I mean, they have, like, a pretty huge player count that's in there already. The game's free, so it's extremely approachable. Yeah. And to my experience thus far, I don't think I'm really missing out on much of the game by not paying anything for it.
Oh, hell no.
And
it's all cosmetic.
Yeah, and nor do I intend to kind of invest any money into this. But, like, at its core, it's a three-player squad-based Battle Royale game, which is great, which I think makes the game more approachable, too, because you're not alone.
It's a character Battle Royale game because you do have your six people that have
your medic,
abilities.
Your DPS, your you know, tank or
but
whatever.
But, like, their abilities are so minor. Yeah. Some of them, like the medic is obviously a huge help, but a lot of them are, it barely even really makes that big of a difference.
Like, you're not going to be that hard up if you don't have, like, the Delta, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it's not like Overwatch where if you don't have a medic, you are screwed.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it is definitely not, and you know, like, I just spent, like, 5 minutes seeming like I really don't like it. It actually is really fun.
Yeah.
There's just... It's the kind of game where if somebody was like, do you want to play this tonight? I'd be like, hell yes, absolutely. But if I didn't have two people who were going to play, I probably wouldn't touch it. And I also don't, like, I don't have that feeling of like, I want to keep playing this, I want to get better at this, I want to devote a lot of time to this. It's more just like, this is a fun thing to do.
Yeah, it's the game I'll play with friends, for sure. For sure. And I think it satisfies that really well as far as like a shooter. It's
super polished, and it feels great.
I've had no server issues thus far. I mean, other than the minor hiccup, which is like standard. But yeah, like,
when we've tried to leave games after we've, you know, when it's like, okay, you've died, do you want to go back to the main menu? It has had some server issues doing that.
Yeah.
But it's never had any server issues during the game or getting into a game.
Yeah, yeah. And it definitely does some interesting things as far as, like, keeping people in the game. Like, battle royales are tend to be pretty punishing because, like, if you die, that's, like ripped, like, it's over.
Yeah.
But since you have a team of three, you're constantly working with people, so you feel, like, a little bit more secure. And then when you die, you can be revived or, like, literally respawned if your teammates, like, pick up your corpse and put it in a machine or whatever. So, like, there's a lot of cool things going on there that I think make it really interesting.
Yeah, I feel like the fact that they can pick you up when you're downed and the fact that then when you actually die... it's really cool that when you die, anybody can go over to your body and loot all of the stuff that you have, but it takes a really long time and it's awkward, so it puts you in a really dangerous position. But your teammates can grab your, like, little banner, mm-hmm. and you have to run to this very public, very out-in-the-open area and dump the banner into this machine, and then you can respawn. So it's, like, huge risk-reward of, like, okay, I can get my teammate back, but I may very well get killed by anybody who might be camping this thing, hoping for people to come and be trying to do this.
Yeah, the biggest benefit, I think, is that it just doesn't disenfranchise you from the game if you die once, you know what I mean? Like, you can still root for your team, because you have a team to root for.
Exactly.
And, like, it's in all of your best interest to work together, you know? Like, there's you are playing poorly if you're not helping your team.
I think
the
game changer with that game is the three-man squad versus like everybody for themselves, because it's so much more interesting.
Yeah.
The biggest issue I'm having with it, as a person who's played way too much Titanfall 2, is that it looks like Titanfall, and a lot of it feels like it. Like, you can't run on walls and you can't double jump, but the slide is still there and you run the same way. It's the same engine. Most of the guns are Titanfall 2 guns. They look exactly the same, they act exactly the same, and they sound the same. And my problem is that I keep forgetting that I'm not playing Titanfall.
Yeah.
Because in this game, A, your mobility is garbage compared to in Titanfall, obviously, because that's the point of Titanfall. And B, people take so much longer to die in this game than they do in Titanfall. So I'm having to, like...
unlearn.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, I have the G7, and it takes 3 shots to kill a person with this. No, it doesn't. Not in this game. It takes, like, 9 shots.
Now you've got, like, head armor and chest armor, and it all depends on how much of it that could be, like, you know, better or worse. So, yeah, I can definitely understand that. But I feel like those are things that you would solve with time.
Oh, yeah. That is just because it is, like, hardwired, ingrained in me because of how much I played that other game.
Yeah.
But, like, anybody who doesn't have that background would obviously not have that issue. But if you are, like, a big-time Titanfall 2 person, A, you're going to be probably a little disappointed with this because it's not Titanfall. It just looks like Titanfall. It doesn't play that way at all. And it's going to be a little difficult to, like, remove all that learned, like, all those learned behaviors that you have from that game. Have to go. It's like, I guess it's like people that transfer from playing Dark Souls to playing Bloodborne, and they have to, like, okay, this looks and feels exactly the same, but I cannot play it in the same way.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, I know that can be really difficult for people. So that's the experience I'm having.
Yeah.
But
I'm enjoying myself a lot. I definitely can see myself playing it more with friends specifically.
Yeah.
But for a free game, I mean, it's definitely worth checking out. Anyone who's on literally anything, you should just try it.
I mean, I found out about it yesterday. Somehow I missed it beforehand, but I mean, it's only, what, 2 days old?
It's literally brand new, so.
But when I found out about it, it was just like a headline on a tweet or something, and I was like, That's dumb. Because I didn't know that... It didn't say that it was free.
Yeah.
I was like, that's stupid. What a waste of time. I can't believe Respawn spent all this time doing this instead of making Titanfall 3. This is EA's fault, which is funny because they have nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
And the second I saw it was free, I was like, oh, okay, I'll play this.
Yeah.
It was like... That is such a massive factor in this, is the fact that it's free.
Yeah.
And I would say it handles its loot boxes in exactly the same way that Overwatch does. It's like vocal lines, poses, skins.
Very kind of like superfluous stuff. Like, like not necessary. I mean, they do lock out two of the like character classes, but like they're not missed. At least at this stage, I don't feel just, like...
The characters are not...
They're all interchangeable.
Yeah, like I said earlier, the abilities that they have are not important enough to gameplay for me to be angry that two of them are locked behind a paywall.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And maybe that'll change the more we play. Like, who knows? But
if you got Overwatch and they were like, okay, here's Mercy, but you can only play as Mercy if you give us $5.
Yeah,
that would be
feel a bit more
that
egregious.
Would be horrible because. Like that's a major thing that you're. This is basically just a skin with a couple abilities that you don't have that probably
that you almost never use. Like
I'm starting to use Bloodhound's abilities more.
Yeah, which is why I'm saying like I feel like this is something that will sort of like determine over time if it's like actually a problem.
It's
but...
just I feel like you could just pretend that they weren't there and it probably wouldn't make that big a difference.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, guys, we are running pretty long on this one, so I think we might be at the time to start wrapping up. But it's been real. We've got some pretty exciting games that we could talk about. Hopefully, the next time we get to chat a bit more about, or I'm at least very anxious to talk more about Kingdom Hearts, because, oh my God, do I have something to say about that game. But for now, thank you, Shane, and thank you, Potts.
Thank you, Skirbo.
Thanks, man. And we'll see you guys on the next one.
All right.